Today's episode of The Beat is brought to you by the Waterworks and Header HVAC, now better to serve you together and proud sponsors of Ohio State Athletics. Turns out, not every week of this year will be jam-packed with nonstop news and chaos for Ohio State. And as we get to the end of this week on The Beat, a Freaky Friday on the Austin and Berm Show, presented by the Waterworks, it's been all quiet around the Buckeyes, at least by Buckeye standards. Maybe too quiet. That's Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward. I'd love for something to happen. This was like the quietest week we've ever had on this beat.
Why would you ask for anything else? I mean, after the
Just spice it up.
After the last 7 weeks, I think it was necessary for Ohio State to have a relatively normal week. The coaches are on the road. Ryan Day's on the road visiting recruits, seeing all of the Ohio State 2027 commitments this week. The Buckeyes' entire coaching staff, including Matt Patricia, on the road making visits around the country. Like it feels normal. That's the way it's supposed to. It's January 23rd. This is the way it's supposed to be. There's not supposed to be nonstop chaos, but it doesn't mean that there aren't still questions that need to be answered for Ohio State. It doesn't mean there aren't still moving parts. But I imagine this coaching staff is actually quite pleased that there's a touch of normalcy happening on January 23rd.
Yeah. I mean, they can leave a lot of that carousel coaching chaos for the NFL, which will directly trickle down, I think, for Ohio State. We have a Friday foursome, actually fivesome, because I tacked on a bonus question at the end. Mailbags, thanks to everybody who reached out on via email, theaustinandbermshow@gmail.com. Tons and tons and tons of questions about the offensive coordinator process and search and candidates. And, you know, it's Berm, I don't think any different than what we've said throughout the last couple of weeks. I know that that's frustrating. I know it would be really cool that we could, if we could throw out a hot board and list potential targets, but like we don't know of any, and there have not been any formal interviews at this point because of the patience and the methodical approach that Ryan Day is taking and his interest, I think, strong interest in NFL caliber coaches.
Yeah, but it's not just that. It's the fact that they have 10 assistant coaches right now. So it is another reminder, I think, of where it's going for Ohio State, and that the Buckeyes are going to fundamentally change the way college programs collect and grow a coaching staff. There is nothing that we've heard or seen or indicates that Billy Fessler or Carlos Lachlan or Cortez Hankton or Keenan Bailey or Tyler Bowen are not going to be on this Ohio State coaching staff. And so that said, the other side, there's also been very stark reminders and messaging that Ohio State's preference is to hire an offensive coordinator from the outside of the program. So all the conversation about whether or not Keenan Bailey and Tyler Bowen or some combination of all the guys could handle this seems to be going to the wayside. So the obvious answer is Ohio State needs to and wants to hire somebody from the outside who is not going to be accountable on the road assistant coach. And then that opens the door for other conversations about Matt Patricia. And does that allow the Buckeyes to maybe consider a world where he is in the same role as this new, anonymous offensive coordinator would be? And that means you could maybe hire another defensive line coach to help with Larry Johnson on the edge, or as Ohio State and Matt Patricia changed his defense, do you find just an edge coach? Do you find, like, there's a lot of things that you can do here if you're Ohio State. And again, it's a reminder that the game is changing, but Ohio State's approach is changing to do all that. It just means that Ross Bjork and the athletic department are going to need to be willing to commit to a significant increase of money to what the coaching pool is about. But who knows? We'll see.
Well, you've jumped right into question number one on a Freaky Friday mailbag. This came from Ryan. Will we see any additional coaching changes outside of the offensive coordinator? One spot in particular is the defensive line. Most teams now split their defensive line coaches into a full-time edge / offensive or outside linebacker coach and a defensive tackle coach. And the defensive coordinator could potentially be a standalone coach, not count towards the 10 recruiting assistants. Do you think Ohio State will be doing the same?
I don't think that's going to happen on defense right now. I don't think it will. I think it's possible. I think it's certainly a conversation as Ohio State is still waiting and as Ohio State fans are still waiting for Matt Patricia's future to be finalized and him to get an extension and a raise and all that stuff. I think that's maybe at least a part of the conversation. Like, hey, is this possible? Because I think that is the way they're going to go with the offensive coordinator, as Ryan here suggests. But you may have coaching changes on defense that are not a result of hiring a standalone defensive coordinator or promoting Matt Patricia, because Larry Johnson's contract, is it up in February? We don't. I mean, it's been hard to get a clear answer.
It is up. Yes.
So, I mean, there is at least a conversation, I guess, to be had if Larry Johnson is going to be returning. I think that's still up in the air. There's not been any indicators that would suggest he's not, especially now as you look ahead, like 2027 number one ranked defensive end in the country, DJ Jacobs, who Ryan Day saw on Thursday or on Wednesday, is committed to Ohio State. Like, those are all of the discussions that have in the past kept much conversation about potential changes to Larry Johnson's role, like, kind of at bay. So I don't know. Larry Johnson, from what we've heard and what I hear from recruits, it seems like he has no intention of leaving. I don't think Ryan Day is going to tell him he has to. So if I think that it's a matter of what they do with Matt Patricia, ultimately, that will make the difference. But I think you'll see this new philosophy on offense this year. And if it works, I think you could see Ohio State and the rest of the country, especially the rest of the Blue Bloods anyway, taking a similar approach in the future, because who you send out on the road to recruit right now really doesn't matter, unless you have a guy like James Laurinaitis with his name recognition and recent, on-field history, et cetera. But it all comes down to money. So whoever is your best smooth talker, that's the guy that should be on the road.
Well, and Ohio State will have to figure out, you know, how much more or how much investment that money is going to be with Larry Johnson, because he was the, unless I'm mistaken, as I recall, last year's coaching cycle, he was the only one to not get a new deal from what Ohio State handed out, because he signed a two-year contract a year ago. And I think everybody wanted maybe to see what it was like with Larry's age and how long he's been in the game. And at some point, I assume he will retire, but I don't know that that is imminent right now, because on this two-year contract, he did a phenomenal job with the veterans, with Jack, JT, Tyleek, and Ty on the way to a national championship, and then followed that up with what I would say was probably the actual most impressive coaching job of his entire career, reloading by having to replace all four of those guys, turning Caden Curry into an absolute monster, helping develop Caden McDonald into a first-round draft pick, bringing back now Kenyatta Jackson, you know, the continued growth and evolution with Edric Houston, and then the work that they've done here to, you know, restock through the portal and everything else to head into 2026. I mean, I think Larry Johnson, based on what my experience covering him and being around him now for the last 12 years, some of them good, some of them contentious, some of them critical, some of them laudatory. Like, it's been up and down, but there's no point, there's no question that right now he's doing the best work of his career while ostensibly at the tail end of it. So, you know, if you had said, like, I don't know, in 2021, leaving the Rose Bowl, I thought the end was very well near, and everyone was, like, I think on board and on the same page that that was probably going to be the case. And now you look at this and I'd say doesn't have to be that way. Maybe it shouldn't be that way. Now, if you could supplement that because of what I'm talking about, he did an awesome job. Is that going to be always sustainable for 1 year, two, three more years? If you could get someone else in there, I continue to maintain that his best work is actually done with the defensive tackles. So you could absolutely leave him in charge of that. Is he going to give up some control to an outside hire or however that would work? Matt Patricia's influence, I think, has, and the way that those guys have worked together has also, I think, been part of the rejuvenation with Larry Johnson. I don't know, but I it's hard to imagine right now with a week to go until that two-year deal expires that he wouldn't be getting a new one, that Ryan Day wouldn't be approving that, or Ross Bjork wouldn't want to have him back. Like, I think that everybody would be signing off on that. So then it comes up to Larry Johnson, and we don't know what it is that he wants to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately that last piece will be the piece that matters. If Larry Johnson wants to return, he'll return. And I don't see any world where Ohio State asks him not to. The question is, can they find a way to supplement what he does with someone else? The only way that happens is if Matt Patricia moves into a standalone coach role. And again, this offseason, right now, I don't see that happening unless the conversation takes a significant change in tenor over the next 10 days. But, you know, the Cowboys hired their defensive coordinator on Thursday. That's one of the jobs that Matt Patricia was most closely linked to in the NFL. We'll see if there's anybody else that comes calling. But it seems like Ohio State is in a position, from what I was told last weekend in conversation with people, that they felt pretty good about where they were with Matt Patricia. Now you just have to make sure you have the contract that he wants and the opportunity to continue building the defense the way that he wants. And a major part of that is the relationships he has with Tim Walton, with James Laurinaitis, with Larry Johnson, with Matt Carrere, who, as we talked about earlier this week, declined an opportunity to be a defensive coordinator somewhere else in college football in the SEC. So, like, they want that continuity, but you can always add pieces. And if the school is willing to pay for it, I would personally do that this year, but I don't think that's what's going to be able to happen.
Yeah. So we'll see. That will be, you know, this next phase here as the coaching carousel spins at both levels, really has come largely to a stop at the college ranks outside of Ohio State. But we will, of course, be covering that. This was another coaching question that we got from Mark. He said, often I am reminded about the development part of the job when two deep guys don't get game reps. How are they learning without playing? It likely hurt Ohio State with wide receivers, cornerbacks, and maybe others last season. All coaches have to learn how to develop a room. I know that Ohio State's belief on this front, Berm, I know what it is, and I think we can maybe from the outside argue about the level of success up or down. I think it's largely been proven that they know what they're doing. Generally, it comes back to the quarterback development, and I remember having that conversation over and over and over about whether the backups needed to throw, how much they needed to throw, how many game reps they should try and get for these guys. I know that it extends to other positions, but that was largely what was driving a conversation that I've had with the coaching staff and Ryan Day for several years, which was the game reps, while valuable, are often for Ohio State not as competitive as the practice reps. And those Tuesday and Wednesday practices, we can scoff at that on the outside all we want, or Mark could, or whoever. Like, and I'm not saying that he is, because it's a legitimate question, but I actually do come down on that side, that those going head to head against Jeremiah Smith, if you're a cornerback in practice on a competitive one versus one Tuesday or one versus twos in this scenario, is probably going to give you a lot more meaningful development than playing in the fourth quarter against Grambling.
Yeah, exactly. Not all game reps are made the same either. If you go back 2 years when Jermaine Matthews, as a true freshman, had to go in and start against Penn State, like, that's a different game rep than, as you just said, Fahim Dulane getting to play in the fourth quarter against Grambling. That's not the same thing. Ohio State is certainly developing their guys in practice, but where they got hurt, and especially as Mark is pointing out, wide receiver, cornerback, et cetera, is that I don't think those guys are being given any reason to be patient enough to wait for the game reps to be the important ones. And how do you fix that is the bigger question. I think the Buckeyes have done a really remarkable job recruiting and building the rooms. Now, retaining them becomes a whole different conversation over these next few years, because you have schools around the country who clearly believe Ohio State is developing their players in practice. Otherwise, they wouldn't be paying Bryce West close to $1 million, right? So, like, the proof is in the pudding when it comes to players at Ohio State being at least believed to be developed around the country, because, again, they wouldn't. Aaron Scott and Bryce West are prime examples of that. Quincy Porter getting however much money he's going to get from Notre Dame, like, that's because they believe Ohio State had recruited and developed those players into the players that they can be. But where it go, how do they learn if they're not getting game reps? You know, that's up to the player. I think that's really one of the, you know, we've talked about how each guy who's left the program in the last month, like, everybody has their own reason, their own story, their own issues, their own, you know, things that held them back, et cetera. The guys that are grinding every day in practice and learning every day in practice, those are the players that Ohio State was fighting to keep. The ones that were not are the ones that the Buckeyes weren't really fighting to keep. So even though they couldn't keep them, because, you know, you have to pay for it nowadays, but I think that the development of the rooms at Ohio State is not a problem. I think now retaining the rooms will be the problem, and will be the problem for every school like Ohio State moving forward, which is why we've been told point blank that they're going to completely restructure the way they build the roster.
Which I think will then put a greater emphasis on what Ohio State evaluates on the diamonds in the rough. I mean, we're going to have to, I think, come to terms with the fact that some parts of signing classes are going to be like two stars and low three stars, because you're hoping to hit for practice purposes and scout team, and maybe down the road that somebody emerges as who could actually help on the two deep. So that will be a different level of test for maintaining the strength of your room than Ohio State has had to deal with in the past, where you're looking at your third and fourth string guys as being top 200 players in the country. And yeah, it's not, that is, I don't mean to sound this dismissively, not as challenging as taking or identifying and taking a two-star and letting them become productive practice players and someone who could maybe put on a helmet and a jersey in the horseshoe in a year or two's time down the road. Like that part is going to be more important. But it's different than the way it has been the last couple of years, where, as you mentioned, you named Fahim Delane or Quincy Porter, Aaron Scott, Bryson Rogers, whatever. Like, those guys were getting high leverage snaps against starting caliber players, some of the best players in the country, which is why they're going to be able to go and likely make an impact wherever they land. But, you know, that situation is going to be very different for Ohio State moving forward.
Yeah, because if you look at the Ohio State two deep, even this year, the 2026 projected two deep, especially if you look back at the 2025 actual two deep, everyone that's on the second team at Ohio State is going to be good enough to start at 95% of the programs around the country. So, like, there's nothing Ohio State can do, in my opinion, to a guy like Bryce West, for example, to get him to change his mind other than to say, you are a guaranteed starter. And that is completely antithetical to what Ohio State believes it should do or will ever do. And so every other school around the country is looking at the Ohio State two deep going, well, if we just give this guy 15% more, we can take him. So it's actually moving forward. It's less about like how Ohio State prepares its two deep to play games. It's about how it prepares its three deep to become its two deep without playing games. Because this year's three deep is next year's two deep. And that, because next year's two deep is going to be starting somewhere else if they're not good enough to immediately push themselves in the lineup at Ohio State. So yeah, like, it becomes a much different amount, you know, like unquantifiable problem, because like, you just don't know what other schools are willing to give for Ohio State players. And, you know, the reality is when you're negotiating nonstop, the players are going to get different ideas of what their values are. They're going to hear it from agents. They're going to hear it from other people. And that's the way it goes. But you know what I'm not negotiating with, Austin? Myself.
Well, I know what you can quantify too. And that's how much weight you lost with Awaken 180.
Awaken180weightloss.com. I've lost 30 pounds in 5 weeks. I'm not negotiating with myself. I'm not telling myself every Saturday, well, I'll just start over again on Monday. I have great coaching from Mandy. I've got a great functioning app that keeps track of my meals. It keeps track of my weight. It also shows body fat percentage, everything else. They provide you a scale. It's the fanciest scale I've ever seen.
It is.
I mean, it's a really fancy scale. I try to carry it with me when I go on the road, because why would I not? It's telling me things about myself I never knew. But I'm following the plan. I'm eating what I'm supposed to eat. The weight's coming off. I feel great. Awaken180weightloss.com. You should do this too. If you're someone like me who struggled back and forth, weight going up, weight going down, finding new habits, developing new habits, and realizing that you can do this because you have support is a major way to do it. Awaken180weightloss.com.
And you have all your limbs.
I have all my limbs, which is the most important thing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This came in from Sam primarily because he's heard you mention this possibility several times, that if James Laurinaitis is truthfully a candidate for the head coach position at Ohio State someday, will he need to leave and come back? We are seeing the difficulty of first-time coordinators on the offensive side of the ball, and Day is an offensive mind. Would James really ever be promoted to defensive coordinator with no prior experiences, or two different positions? Is this somehow different from Brian Hartline? Very good questions, all of them. And hard to truly nail down an answer, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, because I mean, in an ideal world, the conversation about Ryan Day leaving Ohio State doesn't happen for another 20 years. If, you know, he's 46 years old. So you would love to have him continue to grow the program and win more championships and be the head man at Ohio State for the next 15 to 20 years. I don't know that that's the case. His contract expires in 2032. We'll see. Do I firmly believe that James Laurinaitis, if he stays on the Ohio State staff between now and 2032, do I truly believe he will be a candidate for the head coaching position at Ohio State? 100% I do. 100%. He is only heading into year three as a full-time assistant. He is an absolute monster on the recruiting trail. He represents Ohio State and speaks about Ohio State in a way that other people just don't. He is incredibly mature. He is incredibly media savvy. He is incredibly smart and articulate and thoughtful. And a guy that will have no problem raising money. He's a guy that will have no problem going out and being on speaking tours. He understands football exceptionally well. He understands athletes exceptionally well. There's nothing that would make James Laurinaitis not a candidate for the Ohio State coaching job. So the question is for you, Austin, does he need to have full-time lone defensive coordinator responsibilities before he would have that opportunity? My answer to that is no, I don't think he does.
I don't want to be a hypocrite about it, because my answer 8 years ago would have been, you can't do it without at least proving yourself as a coordinator. It is the next step up in your career. It is the next level of responsibility. It is the next, there's a lot more on your plate in terms of organization. That's how you prove that you are ready for each successive rung of the ladder. And then Ryan Day said, no, that's not necessary. And everybody that was around him said, well, we can already see that he's got that. Yes, he was a co-offensive coordinator for Ohio State, and he had been an offensive coordinator at Temple and Boston College before. So that was on his resume. But those 3 years at Temple and Boston College were not what got him the job. And his work as a quarterback's coach for the Eagles and the 49ers was not what got him the job. You know, he was, you know, maybe calling more plays than Kevin Wilson was at that time. It was all collaborative, as Urban Meyer and Ryan Day now both say, that it's when you get to that process on Saturday and play calling, that it's all been determined throughout the week. And I understand all of that, but I don't think in that moment when Ryan Day got promoted that any of us thought that that was like legitimately what Ohio State was going to do, because this job in particular is so much different than virtually every other position in sports, but certainly in college football. And sitting right there, you had both Greg Schiano and Kevin Wilson with previous head coaching experience. And so in a lot of ways, it's remarkable that Gene Smith and Urban Meyer were able to identify that in Ryan Day, and also that they were right about it. That's very rare. Now, will that be the case for James Laurinaitis as he gets deeper into his coaching career? You and I think both have a lot of confidence about what the potential is going to be for him on the sideline moving forward. To me, as we sit here right now, that still feels premature. But could he do that without it? I have to say that my answer is different now than it would have been a decade ago, because we've now seen this happen. You either have the skills and the mindset to do it, or you do not. And I think it's probably likely that James Laurinaitis does.
Yeah. And there's three parts here. Number one, the odds are that James Laurinaitis will at least be a co-defensive coordinator at Ohio State before this conversation ever has to happen. B, as we talked about when it came to the realignment of the coaching staff currently, you're seeing a world that will change away from having your traditional defensive coordinator as a part of the recruiting staff, et cetera, which obviously I think is one of James's strengths. So I think you'd want him to stay as in that role. But and then C, you are seeing in real time, Ohio State very much prefers a head coach who's a CEO, not a game planner, schemer. It makes way more sense, again, because the Ohio State job specifically is so different than 98% of the jobs in the country, 99% of the jobs in the country.
Yeah.
Like, you need a CEO, you need a figurehead, you need the King of England as your head coach at this point, if you're at Ohio State, and a guy who can understand what that entails and what that means and the pressure of it. And I think James Laurinaitis gets that. But all of that to say, I do believe within a year or two, I would bet he's at least in some sort of co-defensive coordinator role, because if that's not the case, other things happen. The NFL comes calling a guy like that, and then all of a sudden, so him and Matt Patricia are very close. If the Matt Patricia extension, the lengthy extension that we both believe and have been hearing about for months occurs, I think it makes perfect sense for James, who's extremely comfortable with Matt Patricia, to be brought up by Matt Patricia in that path. Similarly to the way that Brian Hartline was being brought up by Ryan Day to be the offensive coordinator and take over. So is it different than Brian Hartline? I would say yes, in that the game and the structure of coaching staffs and Ohio State's preferences are very likely to be different in the year 2032 than they were in 2022.
Well, Brian Hartline is giving himself a different avenue to attack that job in 3 or 4 years based on what he's going to have the chance to show at South Florida. So I think I can't speak for him, but clearly he must believe that he needs to go elsewhere to prove that he's capable of doing that and running the program at the highest level. Because we have to be honest, like what he showed in 1 year as the offensive coordinator wouldn't have been enough to absolutely make that the most compelling case imaginable. So, you know, only Brian Hartline will be able to answer that part of it, why that was the right move for him, and what the motivation was to do so. And hopefully we'll have a chance to talk to him about that soon. Yeah. I know he's getting settled in down there, building out the staff, and there's some familiar faces. I'm pretty interested about some people down there that are going to be helping, you know, with Toby Wilson and KJ Hill being added to that staff, and you know, Mike Hartline, a lot of folks that you and I have known for a very long time. Like I am way more interested in Bulls football than I ever imagined that I would be. And it may well alter and impact some of this conversation that we have about Ohio State, whether that's 3, 4, 5, 6 years down the road. I don't really know. I do know that the King of England lost a lot of games for him.
Let me say this. And I'm gonna open up the burn book here for everyone.
Oh, okay.
Okay, let's take a trip, folks. You want to take a trip with me? The year was 2003. I was a young man living in Toledo, Ohio, and I'm the ninth of 11 children. For those of you who aren't aware, nobody in my family ever left Toledo. Okay. Like, why would you? You're the ninth of 11 children in a family that's pretty well known in the area. People regularly help you. Life for me at the time was like life with a safety net. And no matter where I could make a lot of poor decisions, and I would always have somebody to like grab me and protect me from falling and, you know, destroying myself on the ground. I think when you're talking, like, did Brian Hartline feel he had to leave Ohio State to have a chance to come back to Ohio State? I view it the different way. I view it, did he decide he needed to leave so that he could make sure that he is the coach he thinks he is? Not so that Ohio State or other people can come to terms or come to realize that he's the coach that people want him to be, but for him is like, hey, I need to see, like, I'm at Ohio State. This is where I'm from. It's where I went to school. And I will be safe here forever. I could never be fired from this job.
Right.
Like, so when you have an opportunity to say, hey, I'm going to go prove this to myself, I think that may have been a bigger motivation for Hartline. But you know, that I left home on my mother's birthday to say, I'm going to move to Arizona and I'm going to see what life is like without a bunch of people protecting me all the time. So you make mistakes, you live, you learn, but I think it does put you in a position later in life to go back and be what you wanted, and maybe that will lead him back to Ohio State. And I hope it does. And again, I mean, as you mentioned, all those guys down there at South Florida that we're, you know, close with and that we knew over the years, like, I'm rooting like hell for South Florida to win games. And if that happens, then Brian Hartline's going to elevate himself and be put into those conversations again over these next few years as Ryan Day's career at Ohio State, you know, takes its full form. So is it different than Hartline for James Laurinaitis? Yes. Would it be different for Hartline now than it was for Hartline 6 years ago? I think so also. So, I mean, I think that there's just the evolution of the sport.
I can't believe you did that on your mother's birthday. That is.
Yeah. On my mom's birthday. I was the first of her children to leave the nest, really. And I did it on her birthday, 3 days after Christmas. I said, peace.
Berm used to live in Phoenix, if you didn't know.
Yeah, I did. My first day of living in Phoenix was the 2004 Ohio State versus Kansas State Fiesta Bowl. It was the first thing. It was the first social event I went to living in Phoenix. I went to the good old Tempe and to Sun Devil Stadium and watched the Buckeyes beat up the Wildcats. A lot of fun.
And that, folks, is the book of Berm. Question number four on a Friday foursome plus one. Given the change in roster from last year, how do you grade the projected next year's projected two deep compared to last year's?
Ooh, tough. I think the only way we can do this is going position by position. It could take us 20 plus minutes to just go, but let's just quarterback.
Sounds like we should do that next week.
No, we gotta just, I mean, we can deep dive next week if you want, but let's go quarterback. Will be, let's just say up or down from the 2025 season, right? Quarterback down.
No, I'm up. So we'll talk about that on the review.
Okay.
There was no starting quarterback on last year's roster. So.
Okay. Running back. I think it's probably flat because I think the two deep ended up being the two deep this year when it came down to like real carries.
I think right now going into, if we're talking what we thought, which is again, I don't even know how to answer it.
Like, right, because last year's two deep we thought was James Peoples and CJ Donaldson.
And I would have thought going into last year's season, it's like going into it, not the way that it finished, I think I would have taken last year's depth chart over this year's depth chart currently. So right now I would say I'm probably closer to down, although flat could be the answer as well. We're gonna have to get into that.
If Norm would have asked us this last January, we would have been like, oh, hell, the two deep is definitely James Peoples and CJ Donaldson. But the two deep by the end of November was actually Bo Jackson and Isaiah West. So you have to compare it across the timelines. So, and the two deep this year should be, you know, Bo Jackson and Isaiah West. We have no idea what Jacoby Jackson is going to really provide Ohio State yet. Don't know what you're going to get role-wise out of Legend Bay or Turbo Roger. So I'm going to say flat because to me, when the season ended, the two deep is the same as it's going to start this one. Wide receiver down, obviously, because you don't have Carnell Tate, and you lost very high ceiling young guys that had a chance to elevate, like Quincy and Mylan. Do you agree? I mean, that's a clear one, right?
Yeah, I can't. Losing a first round draft pick, and maybe we'll look back in hindsight and say that's exactly what Kyle Parker proved to be, or Devin McEwen. But right now, I wouldn't say that. So that's tough to replace at this very moment, even if you have Jeremiah Smith.
Tight end down. You lost three of your top four. There's no real way to, even though you added two good players in the transfer portal, you didn't add two NFL players in the transfer portal. And that's what you're losing with Max Clair and Will Kaczmarek. People may scoff at the idea that Kaczmarek's an NFL player, but I guarantee you he will be a multi-year player in the NFL. Offensive line?
I'm very high on the offensive line, probably more so than any other depth chart position. And, you know, if you're skeptical, I get that. That's fine too. But when we were talking about them having the potential to play 8 or 9 guys or 10 guys last year, you know, some of those 7 or 8 weren't ready, but that's a different conversation where the only one now that is removed is Tegra Shibola. And so maintaining those other 4 starting spots and now having more experience, even if it's limited experience, with Ian Moore, Gabe Van Sickle, and Josh Padilla is a pretty big deal. And Philip Daniels, that was a gamble. That was uncertain at this time last year. I really think that they're in a good spot on the offensive line. And that's knowing full well, I watched the Big Ten Championship game in the Cotton Bowl like all of you did. I think they're in a good spot there.
I think that there's no position in the sport other than quarterback where experience matters more than the offensive line. And you got a lot of it. You got a lot of it returning. Plus, I think a couple of the younger players, guys like Carter Lowe, who may have more upside than pretty much anybody in that room. Carter Lowe, Jake Cook, Deontay Armstrong. Like, I think that you have some really high level potential guys there that are coming in. You brought in 5 offensive linemen in the class of 2026, including Sam Greer, who I think will be a future All Big Ten type player at tackle. I think the offensive line too deep is going to be better from that experience. Defensive end down, right? I mean, got to be. You can't really lose Caden Curry and lose 4 defensive ends in the portal and get better.
Yeah, I mean, if we're evaluating on potential, maybe there's a chance that it could be better than last year's, but I don't know how we could sit here and say right now that it is unequivocally going to be an improvement when you're losing Caden Curry, primarily with double-digit sack guys are not easy to find.
Right. And the same thing for defensive tackle. You can't lose a first-round pick and get better if you're not replacing him with a guaranteed first-round pick, and they didn't do that. I like John Walker. I like James Smith. I like Will Smith. I like Edric Houston. I like Jason Moore potentially still. I think they signed 4 defensive tackles, and I think a couple of them have the potential to be really good players, but you can't lose Caden McDonald and get better. So linebacker has to be down also because you can't lose 2 first-round picks and you're too deep and then get better. Not realistic. Safety obviously is down.
I think they'll have more playable depth than they did last year.
I think that that is true at linebacker. You're going to have the expectation should be four guys you feel comfortable rotating in to start the spring with Peyton Pierce, Riley Pettijohn, TJ Alford, and Christian Aliagro. So that's different than a year ago where you went into spring really only having two, maybe three if you added Peyton Pierce, but I think that really came on more at the end of spring. And then you got to a fourth playable guy in Riley by the time the season was going on, but not really at this point. Again, safety, I don't know. I think the safety
position... You're just going to say the same thing. You just lost a top 10 draft pick, top five yeah. draft pick, and one of the best safeties that anyone has ever seen in college football. So,
but if... I feel like I'm talking to like a large language model coding agent here. If Terry Moore and Earl Little are as good as Ohio State believes they can be, the sum of the safety room with another year of experience from Jalen McClain and adding in Earl Little and Terry Moore might be better, because I think the ceiling or the floor even for Earl Little and Terry Moore is right where Lorenzo Styles was, but their ceilings should be considerably higher. So that position and lost important depth, that's a piece of it. If this is about the two deep, I don't think the two deep can be better. I think Leroy Roker came on. People really liked that. I think that's these are the decisions in this offseason that I don't think the average fan allows themselves to really think about or doesn't want to agree with, because it flies in the face of what they saw during the season. But a guy like Leroy Roker, the Ohio State coaching staff loves Leroy Roker, loves the guy.
Well, look, I mean, who did we see on the field in the
Dimebacks? In the Miami game, right.
Against Miami. It was not Fahim Dulane. So I know what the recruiting ranking was for him. I know that the potential could still very much be unleashed somewhere else. But as it stands currently, which all of this has to be viewed through the prism of 2026, the guy who was closer to helping Ohio State at the end of 2025 was not Fahim Dulane. It was Leroy Roker.
Right. And clear, he played pretty well in his late season opportunity. So I think you've got that. There are questions about who else is there. So I think two deep safety of 2025 is still better, because you had some idea of what you were going to get behind the starters. And I don't know that you do now. Corner, I don't know. I think corner is kind of a push in my opinion. I don't think that Cam Calhoun and Dominic Kelly are substantially worse or less potential than what you had out of Bryce West and Aaron Scott.
I don't see any difference there. I mean, this skewed far more pessimistic and negative than I thought it would, this exercise, but I that's not how I feel about the strength of the team overall, which is the weird part. It is, I think, an adjustment, and there are a lot of things that have to hit, which is what we talked about earlier in the week. You know, did they check all the boxes in the transfer portal for the positional needs that they had? Yes, they did. And we'll see if they got it right or if they got it wrong, because they have a lot to replace. And those guys that they brought in were not to be supplemental pieces on the depth chart. They were to start or fill meaningful roles for Ohio State. So we're going to find out right away. And that's
and again, critical. Though, If Norm had asked us this a year ago, we would have said, yeah, well, okay, so you lose Cody Simon. That's a major loss. You think you know what you're getting out of Sonny Styles. There's a lot of potential for Arvell Reese, but you don't know. And so last year, we probably would have also skewed towards the year before, because it's the known quantity versus the unknown. So you just have to hope, if you're an Ohio State fan, that the guys that you are counting on to take that step forward, like you counted Arvell to do, you counted on Sonny Styles to do, you counted on Caden McDonald to do, they all did it. So now, as we mentioned on Thursday's episode of The Beat, are the guys like Devin Sanchez, are they ready to elevate? Because the cornerback room, the ceiling is probably higher with this group than it was last year's group. But we don't know that now.
Norm and America and everyone else, send us this question again after April 18th.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing. Norm, we're counting on you.
Let's see how our answers change once we get to the end of winter workouts and spring ball, and then the spring game there in the middle of April in the Horseshoe. All right. Speaking of scheduling, April 18th, as I mentioned, I think is the spring game. I don't know why they're delaying an announcement. You can put those tickets on sale right now. On Tuesday night, Tony Petitti and the Big Ten Network will unveil the full Big Ten schedule finally. I have seen what I think it's going to be. We're not at liberty to reveal that yet. The first date that was confirmed with Ohio State at Indiana on October 17th matches up with what I expect to be the full Ohio State schedule. So Tyler, he gets the bonus question. Because he appealed right to a Marriott Bonvoy member like me, it's the pathway to my heart. Do you have a month estimate on the USC game? I can't really book hotels yet as my Marriott discount doesn't apply until 3 months out, but it would still be nice to plan. Yeah, it would be very nice for everyone to plan. If you're covering the team, if you're part of the team, if you are, I don't know, the operations people at Ohio State, you want to get all that done. What I would suggest, and again, I can't report anything, and maybe it'll be different. I don't know if the final vote has gone through. I would like suggest that it's a holiday that this game is going to be played on. And if you were going to the USC game, you could look into like Mickey's not so scary Halloween party. Head out to Anaheim and just tack that onto your trip. I think that's when I would look around then for Ohio State at USC. Maybe it'll change, but that's the ballpark that I'm anticipating.
Interesting. But the bigger question here, ultimately, Tyler, this is for you. Tell us how we can get Marriott discounts, Tyler. Because I assume you get a Marriott discount because you work for Marriott. We would like to use your discount because this season's worth of travel is going to be pretty freaking expensive.
I think other people other than Tyler can hear you.
Hit me up, Tyler. No, that was just for Tyler.
Oh. Everyone else, I hope you had on your earmuffs. And hope that you want to send us some more mailbag questions for the next Freaky Friday, which will be in a week's time on the very next Friday. I don't know how much more news there will be next week. Probably more than we had this week. That would be my assumption. We'll at least have a schedule to break down and probably some snap judgments on that. So very much looking forward to all of that and so much more. If you are in snow's way, hope you have a safe and very warm weekend. And then we'll talk to you right back here on Monday, unless I jinxed everything and this quiet Buckeye stretch goes haywire over the weekend, in which case we'll see you before Monday. But have a wonderful weekend, a safe weekend. Thanks for joining us all week long on The Beat, presented by the Waterworks and Header Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing. We appreciate everybody. For the Austin and Berm Show, he's Berm, and I'm Austin. We'll see ya.